Hi, this is Debbie Voiles, coach at Mojo for Running, with podcast number 49, First Marathons. I write a column for Florida Running and Triathlon magazine, and I thought for this podcast I would share with you an article from the May-June issue. My column is called First Timers, and this article is about two first-time marathoners and the extraordinary experiences each had while training for their first marathons last fall. When my runners start talking about doing their first marathon, I listen closely. While I love seeing people accomplish that life-changing feat, I know that training for and successfully completing a marathon requires commitment and determination quite unlike that required for half marathons. I need to know they've decided to do it because it's a dream they are ready to work to achieve. And I want them to understand just how hard they will work to cross that finish line. I never want peer pressure or anything else to cloud their thinking. Their desire must be intrinsic and their commitment unfailing. Last year, Brandi Jackson and Michelle Cerullo made that commitment. Each gave it careful consideration, knowing that other things would have to take a back seat, that it would require rising many days at 4:30 a.m., doing long runs in the summer heat, and running in the dark. Equally important, it would absorb all their free time. But when Run Tampa decided to make the Chicago Marathon the fall destination marathon, each decided it would be her first marathon. When Brandi and Michelle made that commitment, neither had any idea just what an unusual journey it would be. Neither did I. Every first-time marathoner has to worry about ever-increasing long runs, soreness, learning what they can eat along the way and what they can't on long runs, and when they can eat it, getting adequate rest, and much more. But if they train correctly, they can expect to finish the marathon and do so without injury. Well, these girls did train exactly correctly. I can tell you that. But for them, that did not prevent two untimely surprises that would make their first marathon a much more challenging goal than any of us could have possibly expected. Michelle, a more experienced runner, had done several half marathons. When she made the decision to register for the Chicago Marathon, it was with full knowledge of what it would require. She knew she would follow her schedule, precisely. She would cross-train with a personal trainer and make marathon training the top priority. Brandi had completed just one half marathon, but she was confident that with 6 months of serious marathon training, she would be up to the challenge. Knowing Brandi, I too was confident. And so it went. Everything was going pretty well for a while. There were the usual aches and pains and a few required days off to rest inflamed body parts. But all was well as we entered July, halfway through training. All that conscientious training seemed to culminate in a 17-mile long run on the Upper Tampa Bay Trail. It was difficult, for sure. But both Michelle and Brandi were just starting to realize that the 26.2-mile distance was definitely within their reach. All smiles at the end, Brandi departed hours later to vacation in Hilton Head, South Carolina, with her family. But 5 days later, still on vacation, she injured her lower leg. At first, Brandi thought she had just tweaked a muscle, but eventually, painfully, an X-ray revealed it was much worse. Not a stress fracture. Even worse, her fibula was broken clean through. She would spend the next 12 weeks in a big, black, rigid boot designed to immobilize her lower leg. Brandi instructed her personal trainer to keep her as fit as he possibly could with her leg in a boot, and she returned and she continued to get up in the early morning hours to ride her bike, boot and all, alongside Michelle and others as they continued their marathon training. Several more weeks passed, and Michelle was holding her own. Early on, there had been a variety of little setbacks as her legs, feet, and ankles adjusted to the increased mileage, but by midsummer, her body was responding. It was stronger and more resilient. Then, during an early morning run on Tampa's famous Bayshore sidewalk, an uneven sidewalk panel took her down. She tripped, falling forward and landing on both wrists. X-rays revealed the bad news. One was broken and the other was severely sprained. That's really bad news when you're only weeks out from your first marathon. Eating was difficult, but she could still run. Michelle would do all the remaining training runs in the late summer in Florida heat with one wrist in a cast and the other in a brace. The heat and swinging the cumbersome devices caused her arms and hands to swell. They itched, too. The cast would end up needing to be replaced more than once, and they were heavy, not so much for a few miles, but even today's lighter weight fiberglass casts get heavy, really heavy, when you're holding them up on marathon training runs. Michelle got accustomed to them, though. In fact, looking back, she said they became a crutch. "It was my easy excuse for a bad marathon," she said. One of the most difficult times for her was when they removed the fiberglass cast a few days before the race. You would think that would be good news, but she'd gotten used to it, had worn it for her 20-mile-long training run. And any change at that time was unsettling, and of course her crutch was gone. Turned out she didn't need a crutch, of course. It wasn't easy, but it also wasn't as difficult as she had worried it would be. The Chicago Marathon was hers. She owned it. Around a mile left in the course, I slowed to shoot a few photos with my cell phone. I wanted to capture the last mile and remember the excitement of finishing forever, Michelle said. That first marathon is always sweet, but the satisfaction Michelle must have felt crossing that finish line, the rest of us will never know. My confidence has always been shaky and hinging on something other than myself. I'm now starting to believe in myself, knowing I overcame a pretty significant obstacle, she said. There will be other marathons for Michelle. This year's Marine Corps Marathon will be her next, and by comparison, with no injured appendages and the confidence gained in Chicago, the prospects look outstanding. Brandy started training on an Ultra G treadmill as soon as the doctor would allow, and even that was an ordeal, as the closest one was in St. Petersburg, an hour from her home. It did help her maintain some level of running fitness, though. So she kept her hopes up and continued to believe it could happen, that she would still be able to run Chicago. But after another x-ray, the doctor gave her the bad news that the break was worse than he'd originally thought. She could not do the race. Heartbroken, but not dispirited, she resolved to target the next good option, the Space Coast Marathon, 7 weeks later. Finally, she was out of the boot, and just in time to get off her bike and run the last half mile of Michelle's last long training run with her, a memorable moment for both. Even for this new date, there still would not be enough time for Brandy to train the way she had hoped, carefully and exactly according to her schedule. But characteristically steadfast, she would not let this goal slip away. She would finish her marathon quest in 2013 and do it with friends. Brandy returned to the pavement, finishing a 20-miler 2 weeks after getting out of the boot, a great confidence-boosting run. While not Chicago, a couple dozen of her Run Tampa friends would be at the Space Coast Marathon to share the experience. Missing critical marathon training weeks, would make it immeasurably more difficult, but she would run that marathon and would finish. That much she knew. With far less than ideal training behind her, the marathon was indeed a test of will. The best part, the support of her running friends, especially Hans Conrad and Diane Ann Bennett, both experienced marathoners. Hans ran by her side when she wanted to quit from miles 12 to 14, and then Diane took over, keeping her focused from 18 through the finish. A dozen Run Tampa runners cheered her on as she crossed the finish line, hand in hand with her good friend, another first-time marathoner, Carla Cervantes. Will Brandy ever do another marathon? Of course. She, too, is registered for this year's Marine Corps Marathon in October. Will it be easy? No. No part of it will be easy. But for Brandy, every long training run will have new meaning. She will just be appreciating that she's able to train for this event the way she had planned to train last time. Hopefully, there won't be any hiccups, but she's proven she can handle any that do arise. I know that I have the perseverance to do anything that I set my mind to. I may not be fastest, but I will not give up. I will finish, even if I am last, she said. Without the broken leg and the ensuing weeks of missed training, Brandy, too, would likely have had an excellent race. So, like every runner who has had a less than stellar race experience, she looks forward to enjoying the race and finishing strong in the next one. Every marathon is different from every other, even for people who've done many, and every runner's experience will be unique. But it's always a worthwhile goal and often a life-changing experience. Every first-time marathoner expects it to be a challenge, both the race and the training. But what they take away from the experience is a new level of confidence that only other marathoners can appreciate. Michelle and Brandy, with their unique challenges, no doubt took away a bit more. That's all for today. Just a few comments about training for a marathon. I'd say the two things that are the most critical from a coach's standpoint are these. One, number one, has to be consistency. You've got to stick to your schedule as if it's a business. You cannot, on a whim, decide, well, I want to go out with friends tonight. I know I'm supposed to do an 8-miler, but I'm taking off, or whatever. I'll work harder next time. You just can't do that. You just can't do that and succeed. The other thing is that consistency buys you the opportunity to listen to your body and back off at some point, at any point, when your body says you need to. So listening to your body is the second most important thing. There was one time during Michelle's training when she told me she was so overwhelmingly tired, and it had been going on for several days, and it was overwhelming. And I said, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're not going to do tomorrow's run or the next day or the next day. And she said, 3 days? And I said, yeah, I don't think you already have 1 day off a week, and that hasn't been enough to get you recovered this time. And I don't think 2 is going to make enough of a difference if you're really feeling this way. So 3 days, I told her not to run for 3 days. And she didn't. And she recovered. And she felt much better. And the only reason that was okay and that worked well was because she had been so consistent. She had banked so many miles appropriately according to the schedule. So taking 3 days off then was the best thing she could do. I find it all the time that when people are on a marathon training schedule and they are being very good about sticking to it, then the problem becomes they hate so much having to take a couple of days off. It might not be because they're overwhelmingly tired. It might be because all of a sudden their shins start to hurt, or there's some other ache or pain. Running through them is the worst possible thing you could do. Your body's going to get tired, and you're going to have some, certainly you'll have some muscle soreness. But if you have something that really might be a problem, like if your shins start to hurt, obviously that's shin splints, that's more than a sore muscle. And you have to respond to it and do what needs to be done. If it requires going to a doctor, you go to a doctor. Maybe sometimes it's a massage therapist. Maybe you need, I recommend for anybody, if they're training for a marathon, to have a massage every week if they possibly can. And I think that can be huge in helping their training. But whatever, the point is you can't just say, well, I'm not going to miss a day of training. If you're hurting, that may be what you absolutely have to do. But one thing that makes it so hard is that you have to make the decision, am I emotionally wanting some time off from training, or is my body needing time off from training? Because you can't just take time off because you're getting tired of training, because you have some emotional desire to take some time off. That's not okay. But if your body needs a couple of days off, a couple of extra rest days, then that's exactly what you have to do. Because if your body is starting to hurt and you run through it, chances are you're going to ruin your hopes for a good marathon, and you may not get to do it at all. In the case of these two women, neither one of them could have expected what happened, and both of them did as well as they did post-injury simply because they had been so consistent leading up to it. And in each case, I think it also helped that both had been working out with a personal trainer for months before they even started marathon training. and cross training. And those things make a difference. And they continued that even after being injured, you know, like Brandy. She was still working out all the rest of her body with the personal trainer. And she was running on the Alt-G treadmill as soon as she was able to. And at some point, I'll do a whole podcast about rehabbing an injury by running on the Alt-G treadmill. But just a word for those of you who are saying to yourselves, what is that? It's really an Alter-G treadmill. And the whole idea is that it looks kind of like a regular treadmill, but you actually zip yourself into what's essentially, it's like a cube that's made of plastic, flexible, and it sits atop a treadmill up to your waist. It comes up to about waist high. You have to wear special shorts. They're kind of like biking shorts, and they have a zipper that goes around your waist, I mean horizontally all the way around. And what you do is you step on the treadmill, you pull that cube up around you. There's a round hole about the size of a person. You pull that cube up around your, so that it's waist level, and there's a zipper in that plastic flexible cube, and you zip your pants to that cube. Then you push a button on the treadmill, and that cube-like plastic, I would say it's like a plastic box, fills with air to the point to where when it gets up to being calibrated to 100%, it will start to lift you off your feet. It's really, really cool. And I used it last summer because I had a stress fracture at the same time as Brandy was using it. Mine, of course, was from, I stepped in a hole. So I kind of like them. I had a non-running injury that interrupted my training as well. But I found great benefit by using the Alt-G treadmill. And what happens is you push a button, that cube fills up with air, and that takes you up to the 100% mark. And 100% means it's taking off 100% of your weight. And that's why you can use it to rehab. And then you push a button to put some of the weight back on. So, like for me, when I started, I was using about 50% of my body weight, and that gave me zero discomfort on my leg where I had had the stress fracture, and I would run for between an hour and an hour and a half on that treadmill twice a week. But as my stress fracture healed, I would gradually add more of my weight back. So after a couple of weeks, I was running at 60% of my body weight. And then a couple of weeks more, I was able to run at 70 and 80. And so I gradually, incrementally increased the amount of my body weight that I was actually using. And it worked extremely well because then by the time I was ready to, when the doctor released me to go back out and train on the roads, I had gradually built up to that. So it wasn't a sudden shock, which was a huge benefit to my own race at the Chicago Marathon. So I'll do a whole podcast about the Alter-G treadmill at some point. But if you ever have any kind of an injury and need to rest or take time off, I would ask my physician or my physical therapist. A lot of physical therapy centers actually have Alter-G treadmills. They use it for all different kinds of purposes. But it's a wonderful opportunity for runners, and you can usually get a script from your physical therapist, from your doctor to use it. In my case, there's a place locally where you can just pay. I think I paid $200, and that bought me 16 one-hour sessions, which was less than my copay would be. So I just paid that, and I recommend that for anybody. And I would say not just when you're rehabbing an injury. I think it's a great way to do speed work, one, because like for myself, I was able for short periods of time, I mean very short, to do like a 6.5-minute mile pace, which would never, ever, ever happen on the roads. But with very little gravity involved, it's easier to move your legs faster, and I think that helps to make you a better runner. You can also concentrate on things like your body angle, all kinds of things. So I highly recommend it. So that's all for today's podcast. One other thing I wanted to say, because I mentioned that there were the two most important things for marathon training are, one, consistency, and two, listening to your body and backing off when you have to. But I guess really I would say there's a third thing that even supersedes those two, and that is that nobody should commit to doing a marathon unless they're already in good condition, unless they've already been training, and have a reasonable mileage base that goes back preferably at least 6 months before you even start marathon training. Because I do see people that I think are doing, that are trying to do marathons that perhaps shouldn't. I think you need to be sure, you know, you need to have all your ducks in a row before you take on a marathon. And by that, I mean you need to have built up a mileage base of, I would say, a minimum of 25 miles for several months. And you need to have tweaked your form as well as you can to make sure that you're running economically. That, because, you know, even small problems on a 10K, if you expand on that to a marathon, what was a small problem when you were doing a 10K that might cost you an ache or a pain sometime, when you expand your mileage to a marathon, that can be a huge problem. Something as simple as maybe your coach tells you you need to relax your shoulders. I'm telling my runners that all the time. Relax your shoulders. Drop your shoulders. And a lot of people, the further they run, the more they lift their shoulders right up around their neck. They're tight. Maybe you've experienced that even out on a long run, maybe a 9 or 10 mile run, you experienced that. Well, imagine how bad that's going to hurt by the time you get to the end of a marathon. So a lot of people think the biggest challenge is having the energy to continue running. But if you imagine the challenge, if your shoulders are too tight, imagine how much they could be hurting by the time you even hit the 20 mile mark. So my advice is get all those other things taken care of before you even think about a marathon. Make sure your form is reasonable. It doesn't have to be perfect. It has to work for you. You have to have been running long enough that you have a natural, comfortable form that doesn't cause you problems. If you have any recurring issues, whether they're IT band issues, if you keep getting shin splints, whatever, you need to make sure all of those things are behind you before you commit to training for a marathon. And then you have to make sure your family is on board. Sometimes your office, you know, let's say you're in charge of your office. Let's say you're the boss and you can control getting time off, but it means that you can spend less time helping other people, or I don't know. But the point is you need everybody in your life to be prepared for you to be somewhat obsessive about your training for 6 months when you're getting ready for your first marathon. Okay, that's all for today. Next week is number, or next time is going to be podcast number 50. So I don't know. I think I might try to come up with something really special for that. As I said before, as I've said many times, if you haven't been to the Mojo for Running website, please visit it. The new one still is not launched, and I've been saying for 6 months or more that it would happen soon. But there is a Mojo for Running website that you can go to and visit, and you can send me emails. My email address is deb@mojoforrunning.com. If you have ideas for podcasts, please email me and tell me what you would like for me to talk about. If you have any specific questions, please let me know. If you have friends who have always wanted to become a runner but have not, or have tried and have failed, or if you have family members, a spouse maybe, that would like to start running, I'm about to launch my new website, which will be called beginnerrunnervillage.com, and it will be a membership site, and I'm going to teach people how to run just exactly the way I do with my local clients that have never run before. So it's this particular website is going to be aimed at non-runners that want to become runners, not even what I would call beginner runners, but before beginner. So it's going to be an extremely gradual progression from walking to running. Many of you have heard of other Couch to 5K programs. This really, it would be a precursor to, well, not a precursor. It actually accomplishes the same thing, but the difference between my Beginner Runner Village program and those programs is that mine is stretched out over a longer period of time. It accommodates people who are very out of shape, maybe overweight, who haven't exercised much for a while, and therefore I stretch out the whole program. There's a specific schedule, but it's stretched out for months instead of like 8 weeks, because my experience in working with those brand new beginners is that they tend to get hurt very easily because their bodies aren't used to it. And the way to accommodate that is to go slower and to do more strengthening exercises that are appropriate for somebody who is in that condition. And I say that specifically because I think those people, if they went on some running website and just looked at exercises for runners and did those, many times they're going to get hurt just doing the exercises because they're that out of shape to start with. So my program gets them started with some low intensity exercises that they can do several days a week as they gradually build up the running a little bit at a time. And I have done that. I've used this program long enough that I know it works, even for people who've tried and failed before. So if you have any friends or relatives that are interested, please tell them to check out beginnerrunnervillage.com. It's not up right now, but just keep that in mind. Maybe by the time you hear this podcast, it will be up. Hopefully, it will be up before July 2013. That's all for today.